Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is the 2nd of September, 2013, and we're coming to you from Japan and Switzerland, where we're joined on the line today from Geneva by our old friend, the Geneva Business Insider, David L. Smith. And this is, of course, that monthly series where we bring you the insights and information from the Geneva Business Insider blog. The link will, of course, be in the show notes for this interview. As always, David, great to have you here for today's conversation.
Good to be back once again. Thanks a lot.
Well, since the last time we talked, a lot has gone on in the world. But of course, the number one event that's happening geopolitically right now is the Syrian chemical weapons attack that did or did not occur, that may or may not have been from Syria or may not have been from wet rebel forces. There's a lot that we don't know about this attack, except for the fact that nothing seems to add up and that they're not presenting any evidence for the case that they're making that this was indeed Assad. So let's get your take on what did or did not occur there the other week in Syria near Damascus.
Well, I think what did certainly happen is that about 1,400 or 1,500 people died a horrible death because of the use of chemical weapons, sarin or whatever else it was. Of that, there's no doubt. I would point out, however, that the outrage that has come to the surface around the chemical weapons story is around a number of people that represents 0.05% of those who have been killed in this civil war in the last 2 years. And I think we should feel deeply sorry for the loss of those other innocent people at the hands of people who slit their throats, cut their hearts out, eat their lungs on videos, etc. And this is a terrible indictment of humanity. And, you know, to say that the outrage has only come because of this latest event, I had been outraged for years about it. So I think that's the opening comment. Now, as for the origins of these events, I have absolutely no privileged information at all as to who did or who did not start throwing stones first. The only thing I'm sure of is that this has been seized upon by the West, in particular by the USA, as the smoking gun, which has broken through their barriers of tolerance. But one could only ask the question, was this what they've been waiting for all along? And if it has come from, you know, Saudi-sponsored people, if it has come from, you know, the regime itself, it doesn't really matter. It is an excuse. You know, maybe it's the Crown Prince of Sarajevo event for this particular regional dispute, and nobody wants to let it go. I did have the pleasure is the wrong word, distaste, I suppose, of listening to John F. Kerry's take on the situation, which I equated really to a schoolboy performance, essentially because he walked on stage, behaved like a spoiled brat, displayed his outrage, and then walked off screen before anyone asked him any questions. Now, for me, if I were Secretary of State, and I were trying to communicate to people what had happened, I would provide them with all the information. I wouldn't behave as though I was throwing a tantrum, and I'd provide them with all of the answers possible. So the last link in this thing to me is if really the US had unequivocal evidence, they would present it without the slightest doubt to the UN Security Council. And at that point, they would have the moral high ground in an argument against China and Russia to say, look, you have been supporting this tin pot dictator for years. Look at what he's just done. Goodness knows what he's going to be capable of if we increase the pressure further. Now, are you going to come on our side finally that we have the proof of what he's capable of or not? And of course, that's the opposite of what happens, which means that in all certainty, the U.S. evidence is about as frail and fragile as the evidence that they had at the time of Iraq when they had their other puppet put on the screen, Mr. Colin Powell, who disgraced and dishonored himself and America by telling lies to the entire world about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. So those, I think, are my takes on the situation at the moment.
Well, I concur with much of that. In fact, I would go even a few steps further and say that this attack lines up perfectly with all of the indications that we've had for months now that the rebels, A, possess chemical weapons, and B, were prepared to use them to set up Assad. So to my mind, it looks almost certain at this point that this was some sort of false flag provocation, probably sponsored by the Saudis and directed by Prince Bandar, of all people, who is making an interesting comeback into the geopolitical scene. More on that is available in my latest podcast, and we also have the latest report from Mint Press News about people on the ground in Syria, in the area of the chemical attack, now reporting that they believe it was a Saudi-sponsored false flag event. So a lot of information certainly does not square with what John Kerry is attempting to sell, and as you say, attempting to sell with a rather poor schoolboy performance that that wouldn't really muster a passing grade in most schools. So absolutely, I think this is. It seems to be the provocation event, the event that's meant to set off the gears of war, and we've certainly seen, for example, in the polls in the United States, the deep public sentiment against the military intervention that's been put on the table, and similar numbers coming out of the UK, where of course you are not situated, but you're still a resident of the UK. You're also you're a citizen of the UK, a resident of Switzerland, so you have a very interesting European perspective on all this. Tell us where the Europeans are on this issue, and what the sentiment on the ground there is.
Well, I think the sentiment on the ground is generally negative. I think the basis of trust on which the general population of all countries hand over the responsibility of managing the country to a chosen elite or a self-perpetuating elite, I think has basically been destroyed. Now, I think that destruction took place during the Bush and Blair years, and Cameron now is paying the price of the fact that he can't manipulate the population with blatant lies to the same degree. Now, what is very clear is with almost everything that happens, there's a big disconnect between the opinions of the public and what the politicians do. And the reasons for that are generally because the politicians are following the interests of corporate interests or banking interests in order to maintain and perpetuate their own situation. So when you get a disconnect where there is maybe the politicians decide to do one thing where there's a 30 or 40% support, I'm not totally surprised at that. But when you're looking at situations where in the UK, where there is at least for the average person in the UK, a severe recession, difficulties to get job, difficulties to make ends meet, the guy in the street does not want a war in the Middle East, which is going to cost the lives of the kids down the road. Because once again, it's never the lives of the elite's kids are put online. And they don't want the money to be spent on, you know, $1 million or $2 million cruise missiles to blow up another innocent families in another part of the world. So when you end up with a situation where 10 or 11%, I think is the quoted number in the UK, of the population actually support a war, and 89% are against, and you have the political class saying, rah, 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 off we go, then, you know, we no longer have an accountable government. Now, what has happened with Cameron, thank goodness to my view, is that he has been stopped from, you know, being the American poodle once again, and he must be kicking himself in his pants now, saying, oh my God, how am I going to get $100,000 a speech after I've finished my time as prime minister? Will I get $10 million a year from J.P. Morgan as a board member like Tony Blair? This has really put my future in danger because I haven't been able to start this war against the innocent citizenry in a country in the Middle East. I'm appalled at the whole thing. And what I am very happy about is that little by little by little, the general population is beginning to understand that these games are being played to feed the military-industrial complex and increased debts and bond issuance fees, etc., etc. And wars are absolutely wonderful for this. And I give a very good demonstration of it, but there's a test that you do as a school kid where someone says if it takes 10 years to get a bottle of water 1/4 full by doubling the quantity every day, how long does it take for that 1/4 full bottle to be completely full? And the answer, of course, is 2 more days. So what is happening at the moment is that the general population are the quarter full bottle. And once the real understanding comes out where it kind of multiplies on itself, there's going to be complete revolt against this two-tiered system of society. And I hope it comes down in a peaceful way, but I somehow doubt it.
Well, I guess that remains to be seen, but I think it absolutely cannot be denied there's a sea shift going on in public opinion, a tidal change that's happened in the last several years. And I think there are a number of factors behind that. The legacy of the Iraq war, of course, still haunts the shadow of any prime minister or president that wants to wage a war of aggression in the Middle East, I think. And also, I think we have to look at the way that the internet and alternative media has really changed the political discourse. And I know that I am somewhat in the echo chamber here as being part of that alternative media, but I truly do see a change in the discourse happening right now with the idea of a false flag event in Syria is something that was suggested and proposed on numerous mainstream websites, at least in the comment section, by the commenters themselves. And I think this is an idea that is truly spreading around. So I think you're right. There is a change that's happening right now, and it remains to be seen exactly how that takes place. But I want to get your opinion on France's position in this, because I find it particularly interesting that Hollande has signed up and seems to be ready to commit forces to the latest Syrian intervention. And we see this perhaps as a pattern of French eagerness for intervention in Libya, in Mali, now in Syria. Is this just a holdover of these French former French colonies that is the sort of the historical tie here, or is there something deeper going on with this?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I classify Hollande practically in the category of a Galtieri from the Falklands War period. You know, he's got such terrible problems at home. He's trying to distract attention somewhere else and, you know, parade on the world scene as a defender of right and justice and all the rest of it. In fact, I could almost say the same thing as I've just said about Hollande, about Obama. It's not really much better or much different. The only difference is that Obama's got a much bigger stick at his disposal, namely the American military. The French economic situation is pretty diabolical. François Hollande envies the popularity ratings of Mr. Obama at the moment, which are in the pits. But Hollande, it's even worse. I mean, the population who normally are their country where they respect their president, it's always Monsieur le Président, he now has a nickname of Le Pingouin or the Penguin. And it's been like that for months. I mean, they see him walking around in a dinner suit and everybody just laughs. So, I mean, he is a pathetic figure who, to my view, should never ever have got elected, but it's just an example of if there's no one else around, someone's got to win. And my take on it, that's my take on the man in the country at the moment. I think one thing that certainly would have influenced him is that in the troubles in Mali, the French did actually have significant military support from the Americans, and there has to be a payback on that, so he can't turn his back. And the other thing I would say, although once again I have no proof, but I know how the French mind works in general, is this is a great opportunity, now the Brits have fallen out of the picture, for him to cozy up and take over the special relationship of Britain. But I have to say the special relationship Britain has with America has become sadomasochistic in its nature over recent years, and the British people are beginning to wake up to that as well. And it wasn't easy during the Second World War, but it was certainly indispensable to the victory of the Allies. But now it's just being used, abused, picked up and dropped. And, the British Prime Minister and foreign ministers are all just meant to, and defense minister, just meant to troop along and follow the party line. Now, if what you say is, we are heading for a major conflagration of some sort, whoever's on the right side or the wrong side doesn't matter. It's who's on the winning side and who's on the losing side. And as America has the greatest military power, you can't afford to ignore them completely. But the dissension, I think, if you go to the French, the general population in France, the support for America there is probably not all that much different from the UK. And it's just a presidential punt to do the contrary. And the French political system is different because in reality, the French Prime Minister is a Minister of the Interior, and the French President has all powers to do with international affairs since the time of the Fifth Republic with de Gaulle. So he has much more leeway and much less accountability there, so he can stick his nose much further up other people's posteriors in his own right than a British Prime Minister can actually get away with.
I think you're exactly right in that assessment. And, well, if the French plan is to take over the UK special relationship, I don't think it's going to work, because unfortunately, people aren't being forced to eat freedom muffins in the way that they were being forced to eat freedom fries in the run-up to the Iraq War. So, it's an interesting situation, but I think you're right that people are waking up to the fact that this so-called special relationship does not benefit the people of America or the people of Britain in any way, shape, or form. It's all about the politicians and the banksters and all of those at the top of the system. So it is interesting to see, as I say, the public opinion changing on this. But let's spin things forward. Let's assume that there is some sort of strike that does go ahead from this, whether or not the Congress actually approves of it. Obama has already stated that he doesn't need their approval to go ahead. So let's assume that if some sort of strike goes ahead, how do you see that unfolding? What are the implications or ramifications of a strike on Syria?
I think I take one step backwards. If we take President Obama, who taught at one point constitutional law, he is an outright liar when he says that he has the power to go and intervene in a foreign military context when there isn't direct threat to the security of the United States. So everything that is being done on a lawless basis, both in terms of the US and internationally. Now, what is going to happen after that? I could only guess. I don't have any kind of particular insight or special knowledge. I mean, the NSA doesn't give me their communications, so it's I just have to guess. But I think, you know, the first step is likely to be a face-saving salvo of missiles, you know, kill a few hundred or thousand people in order that Obama doesn't have a red face. Then who knows what's going to happen. But the bigger issues in all of this it's nothing to do with the missiles. It's the overall geopolitical situation. And Syria is allied to Iran. Iran is allied to Russia and to China. And then on the other side, you've got Saudi, you've got Qatar, who've all got rival and conflicting interests. So you're going to stir up the biggest hornet's nest that the world has ever seen. You know, if you put napalm into forests in the middle of Vietnam, nobody really cares. But here you're touching massive national interests of other people. And if I were Putin, I would be arguing to under the same laws as America, I would be arguing that what is happening with America now intervening is a threat to the national interests of Russia. Now, this is something that I'm sure in private Putin has said extremely clearly to Obama and his representatives, but it hasn't led to any kind of sensible stand down at all, and to say, all right, let's cool it. So one can only say that the rhetoric is no importance. One can only judge by the acts, and at the moment the acts make America look like the aggressor in all of this, at least to my interpretation. And where it goes from there, with, you know, the Mediterranean's a small place, and there are one or two big fleets in there, and it just needs something stupid to happen. And who knows who's going to be shooting at whom for what reason. And where we go from there, I mean, one can only imagine.
Unfortunately, it seems that we've been on this knife edge of tension for a number of years now, and there always seems to be one of these flashpoints that could spark the powder keg. So it is an increasingly hairy situation, and I think that must speak to the underlying geopolitics of what's going on. And I think the bigger agenda of all this, not only the overthrow of Iran, but of course the encirclement of China and Russia by NATO, is all part of what's going on right now, and it feeds into these types of situations that make them even bigger than they might appear on the surface. So there's a lot to consider in all of this, but let's for a moment bring it back down to the local and or to the near term, and let's talk about some of the economic implications of this. I do appreciate your economic insights. Let's talk a little bit about some of the risk on trading that's gone on in the wake of the possibility of Syrian intervention and what that might mean. Do you think that this is, for example, going to indicate a trend, or is this just a momentary blip when we look at, for example, the way the Treasury rates have come down slightly as people flood back into U.S. Treasuries as some sort of safe haven? We saw gold spiking up to $1,425 before plunging back down below the $1,400 mark. We even saw a very, very bizarre thing that happened just the other day where gold plunged about $25 in the space of a few hours and then regained it almost completely immediately. So another bizarre manipulation taking place. What's your take on what's happening economically as a result of all this?
Yeah. I think maybe I'll start with a general comment. If you look at America, the way it stands at the moment, the greatest objectives, I think, of the American elite are to ensure their global hegemony by whatever means and to preserve the dollar as the world currency of reference by whatever means. So that is difficult to do if your country is completely bankrupt, which America is to all intents and purposes. So what you have to do is you have to use the tools at your disposal. And at the moment, we have seen years of manipulation. If you take the gold price, for example, we're talking about daily manipulation, where the gold futures market is attacked to keep gold down in price to make it seem that the dollar remains strong. You then look around the world and say, all right, we're looking... In Japan, they're printing money like crazy. So, who would want to be sitting with Japanese bonds, which are going to be yielding for the next 10 years less than the projected inflation in a country where the government's still trying to push inflation? You take big countries like China, where there's an economic slowdown because they live off, they providing services and goods to America. You look at the disaster of a currency crisis that's unfolding in India, and then you have to look at the other side of the equation, which is the very talented false marketing, false flag marketing, let's call it, of American treasuries and the American stock market and the American recovery. Now, all of this is orchestrated. It is all completely detached from any form of reality, and these guys are extremely good at it. If you take Mr. Goebbels, he would be in great admiration of what is achieved by the Fed and by the White House spokesman. I mean, it is all smoke and mirrors, and it's wonderful to watch. And even when people do come out and tell the truth, they are poo-hooed as, being either conspiracy theorists or eternal pessimists or whatever. So the whole thing's just a big game. And all the movements that you see, everything is said by the central bankers, is all designed to create an effect without actually doing anything. Because if they actually did what they said they were going to do, the consequences would be absolutely dire. I mean, if the American economy actually tapered, and just stopped buying in the market, then there would be no buyers. There'd be absolutely no buyers. So what they have to say is they're going to do it, in which case everyone says, oh my goodness, then... rates are going to go up, and there's a bit of a panic, and then they do absolutely nothing, and then or they do the opposite, because all of these people have to be judged not by what they say but by what they do, and whether it's Mr. Kerry, whether it's Mr. Carney in the UK, whether it's Osborne, whether it's President Obama, forget all the words, don't listen to anything they say, and I would say that'd be my general observation. I think exactly answered your question.
Yes, it is. I mean, I think that's ultimately the best advice we can give. And it's frustrating to see exactly as you say, these promises that they make that mean nothing whatsoever. And yet the markets actually do move based on these promises, or at least are manipulated to move in that direction or this direction. So everyone will have their eyes on the Federal Open Market Committee meeting later this month. But again, I think it's a tempest in a teapot in a lot of ways, because as you say, they can't actually taper what they're doing. They might just shift it into a different program or give it a different name, but they're still going to be propping up the American economy by printing phony Federal Reserve notes out of nothing. So on that note, I've been directing this conversation largely, but is there anything that you'd like to address before we go today?
No, I think we've done a pretty good sweep of the world, you know. I think that's fine for me today. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, just tell people once again about your website.
Yeah, my website is the GenevaBusinessInsider.blogspot.com. And you'll see I do regular posts. I do radio interviews, TV interviews, which are available to listen to. I run my own financial advisory firm. I'm not an investment advisor, but I advise people in the financial context. And if anything you've said, if anything we said today is interesting, then I'd be very happy to hear from any of the audience that we can talk further. Thank you.
Well, you're hearing from my son right now, so I'm going to go check on him. But you have a great day. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks. It's a pleasure as always.